This is great attendance. Definitely didn't expect this many people, but this is great. Really excited to get in front of you today. Congrats to George Soto and Sales for Startups. They are an awesome organization. George is extremely well plugged in the Bay Area, and if you want to talk sales, he's incredibly passionate about it. And him joining forces with Max is just a great duo. They're going to do awesome things with Sales Hacker. So congrats to both of them.
Thank you.
I'll start this with a story, and I actually changed up the presentation, so I'm not even sure which slides are going to show up here. The story is that earlier today I got an email from Andrea, who works with Sales Hacker, and she said, remember, don't put any product in the presentation. I'm like, product? I hate when people do that. That's awful. I go to this presentation, all they talk about is their product. And then I see Yesware, like all across here on the screen, the first page. I'm like, okay, I have to change things around. And so the first thing I did was to remove Yesware from this page, but I sent the updated version to Andrea, but apparently they didn't make it. So I want to make this not about a product pitch, but I do get asked a lot by the nature of what I do about how to use email to impact sales. And I thought, after the email from Andrea, I went through each slide that I had, and I said, are each of these points relevant to people that don't use a product to support it? And the answer was yes, 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 yes. And I thought back to my days at NetSuite a few years back, and I'd actually come to that company through acquisition. And the acquired company was not very good at sales. We didn't really know how to do it. We didn't know how to scale it. And all of a sudden, you know, I went from basically a quota-less job, by and large, as shocking as that may be, seeing to the salespeople in this room, to $1 million quota. And I remember people coming up to me at the organization my first year there saying, that got to know me fairly well, and saying, Mike, you look stressed out. What's going on? And I heard from one person, I'm like, okay, that's not a big deal. And the second person comes to me, Mike, you look stressed all the time. And then a third and a fourth person came up to me, I'm like, well, yeah, I have a fucking $1 million quota and two deals that make up this quota to try and hit it. Like, how am I going to do this? And I thought, and calling people wasn't working. I mean, NetSuite very much comes from the Oracle way of doing sales. And they talk a lot about, you know, getting on the phone with people, which I think is incredibly important. But I felt like I was a decent writer and I could have an impact via email. And so I really started to build a process for doing this, a lot of what I'm about to talk about today, with email. So my point with all that is it does not require an application. I think you can do a lot of the things that I'm talking about. A lot of it's really common sense. You're probably validating a lot of what you already think about how to sell, but hopefully introducing some new ideas for how you can do it as well. Before we go to the next slide, one other thing that we highlight in our blog post is how Obama ran a campaign. And the highest generating open email he had was with the subject header, hey. That's all it said. And he said he attributes that, his campaign, to generating millions of dollars of donations to his campaign as a result of that. We tested that subject header, and it was terrible results. So I think it's all up to your interpretation of data. And by and large, what you're going to see today are things, hopefully just to lay the foundation for ideas for you to think about how you might want to use email to sell, but not take it as gold. And a lot of it's really going to apply to your business, going out to experiment with things that will work well for you. And so I start with that. One thing that I can say definitively is true, though, is that bad sales emails absolutely cost you money. I think we've all experienced that, we've written poor emails and they haven't led to where we want to go. But a lot of what, you know, I was doing in my practice at NetSuite, and I think a lot of what many of us still do today, is just email blind. I mean, there are lots of best practices out there about how to use email to sell. And many of them are not backed with anything around data. So I wanted to try and lay a foundation today with some data to support and hopefully give you some new ideas for how to use email to sell. And as is very evident to us, each non-reply, each missed reply, has opportunity costs, time, and the deal. They're not going as long as quickly, not getting that meeting as quickly, or closing down that deal as quickly as you might like. So to try and use email in as efficient and effective way as possible in sales is incredibly important. And these are generally just some of the numbers or ranges that we've seen for how many hours and how much time salespeople spend trying to use email, and even in calling per year, and that, that time adds up, and that it's really important to be not just far-reaching in your approach, but very specific about who you're going after and try to convert those at a high rate. And so what we'll cover, what we'll talk about today is the whom, what, when, and how many. What I will not talk about is this magic email that's going to close you 10 deals in this week or month, or just to use this simple trick to increase your reply rate to 98%. I think that would be very difficult to do generally, and especially difficult not knowing, you know, every company and vertical and industry that each of you represent. So this is data that we got, just to give you some context, for more than 1,000 users, 9 rapidly growing inside sales organizations, over 500,000 emails we did it last year. So I'll talk about 7 secrets generally that we found from this this study. The first is to include multiple recipients in an email. And that the first thing I thought when I saw this was, yeah, no shit. Like, you include multiple people, you're more likely to get a response. But we're actually very specific about this, and we show that rather than sending to 2 recipients, and I think the previous presentation was very relevant, where you have an opportunity to copy someone else on the email, we found that both open and reply rate increased 12% on each side. The science behind this tells you is that generally human behavior is that is you're going to, when 2 people are in the 2 line, they're going to defer to the other person to respond. Whereas actually, if you call out someone specific, named, and then you make it visible to someone else that you've called them out, that they're a little more likely to open up that message and to reply to it.
Is that for like cold emails or warm emails?
Yeah, most of the context that we're talking about is in cold emails. There are some that apply about within the sales process as well. Generally, the studies that we're doing are talking about tracked emails, which indicate that you have some reason to want to know why this person or if this person is opening it up.
So, like, I'm really supposed to be like, hey, dear Billy, and then CC, like, to 4 people on his team?
If you have the opportunity, I don't think it's relevant in every case where you're emailing someone cold. I think if you have an opportunity where you can copy them in to do so. But certainly there are instances where you might be emailing someone cold and it would be offensive to them to try and copy other people in order to just get a reply.
Or even worse, the person you copied in is definitely.
What's that?
Or even worse, if someone you copied in is definitely.
Yeah. I have a terrible story about that.
would you write to the, I guess, the person you're trying to reach and CC his boss? Would you say that would be a better result, get better results than the other way around?
And that's where I think interpretation is really important. For me, not necessarily. If I know the boss well, I know the relationships between them, and I know them well, then perhaps. But I'm not going to do that cold, because to me that's offensive. That's saying to the person, if you don't reply to this email, your boss is going to be on it.
Yeah.
And that, I'm not trying, that's not something that I'm trying to create.
Is this
going to
be available somewhere?
This
information on your blog or something?
Yeah, it's available on our blog, and Max does a great job of disseminating this to everybody, so absolutely, yeah.
So if you're not emailing the VP and CCing the CEO, are you doing the reverse?
We did less about the specifics of the role of the person that you're emailing, and more about just the fact that if you do, you have an opportunity to do so, to do it. And keep the questions coming, by the way. I'll try and sift through them and make sure this gets along in time. So
let's do them all at the end, and
okay.
We can go through. And
okay, sounds good.
That'll be easier.
Number two.
We'll go for like 2 hours.
Yeah, right. Number two, which actually was surprising to me, what I will spend some time on, subject line doesn't matter. I'm pretty sure most of us aren't putting 20 to 25 words in a subject header, but originally we were thinking more of 3 to 5 words. Turns out on a number of cases, but we're displaying 2 here, that the data is all over the place. It actually doesn't matter how long the subject header is. It's more about personalizing that to the person that you're doing outreach to. Number 3 is the wrong keywords cost you meetings. So there are a couple different examples of this. The one that we give is if you're asking for time from someone, that we found that actually using the word call was much more impactful than asking for a meeting, time in the calendar, or just time generally. Perhaps they felt it was a little bit more personal. But I think, as the example I gave earlier about the Obama campaign, I think this is a lot about the specific case that you're talking about, who you're reaching out to, how much of it is personal versus generic, and there are lots of things that in sort of general words you do. I think the takeaway for me in this is just to be conscious of the words you're using. In fact, there was a really big customer we won recently, and it started with a cold email I sent to the SVP of sales, and I remember getting feedback now that after the deal is closed that was really meaningful to me, which where they said they really liked the fact that I called their salespeople agents instead of salespeople, because that's what they use, that's the term that they use, and it just resonated with them. Just an example of just trying to be more personal to the people that you're doing outreach to, and show that you're researched and you know about their business as you're doing outreach, so they don't feel like just any company that you could be sending an email to. Number four is you may be sending emails at the wrong time. This is really tricky, this one for me, because what this shows is what you would expect, right? The highest reply rates are during the hours of 9 to 5 when people are working. So obviously if you send an email, the reply rates are likely to be higher. The takeaway for me in this is in fact more so the each of the sides of the bar graph, which is to show that early in the morning, people are not replying to cold emails or tracked emails as heavily as they are later at night. My thinking is perhaps it's because people have very important things or projects that they're focused on in the morning and want to get those out of the way, and they might be a little bit more tired at the end of the day and be more reactionary, and so they're more likely to respond to something rather than to have to go initiate work on a project they're doing themselves. It could be any number of things. The funny thing I thought here was this dip around like 2 or 3 o'clock and people are like they've just eaten a big lunch and they're all tired and stuff, haven't had their coffee yet. Like, just try not to send an email around 2, 3 o'clock after that sitting from lunch. But other than that, I think, again, somewhat arbitrary, but to try 6 to 8 at night. I think when people, after they've gone home, they've had a chance to go through their commute, maybe they're checking back the email after their dinner. And the same with weekends. Obviously, you're not going to be sending all of your emails on the weekends. And these are all things to experiment with, by the way, too. It's not to say that there's one hard way of doing things again. But if there's a particular set of leads that are important to you, or a particular opportunity that's strategic to you that you want to experiment with, try sending on a weekend. We found that the reply rates and the open rates increased pretty significantly when you are sending on a weekend rather than during the course of a week, when they perhaps don't have as much time to react to vendor requests as they would when they're shifting back through.
Is that variable based upon size of the business?
You know, I think one thing I'd really love to do is to have this broken down into like all the different segments and buyers and things, which would be awesome, but this is pretty generic across a set of about 1,000 salespeople and 500,000
Within Yesware, can you extrapolate out, like, obviously your
Reflect
like the
sample size of when emails. These are all based off of when they were sent, not off the reply.
Yeah,
so,
the total number of emails, the sample is much different.
Yeah, so I'm not sure I follow the question.
I guess just like for A/B testing different things, if you want to test out like a few emails in a week, yet, like who's to say that that was like a
Yeah.
Like, how can you tell
I see what you're saying. Yeah, so I think for us, we were looking just for a meaningful number volume of email activity that we could include in people that we had reached out to ask if their data could be anonymously included in this study.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Got it. And then when you're running tests in-house, like how many do you need to test to make sure you have a sample?
You know, I think it can be pretty small. We can talk about this more afterwards, but I don't think it has to be a significant number. It just has to be the same criteria for the set of people that you're reaching out to. It could be as few as 100.
Is the best open time that you showed on the prior slide based upon weekday or weekend? Does that differ? So if you're doing a send on the weekend, the target you think might be open to that on the weekend, does the time of day change in your experience?
It doesn't show it on this study. We found that Sundays, actually, especially closer to Sunday evenings, were better. It's 10 people are doing the weekends and then trying to get ahead of the week.
Thanks.
Number five, if they don't, and this is going to be caveat, so don't take this true entirely, but if they don't reply today, they probably won't reply at all. This to me is fascinating. Although I think probably what a lot of people would find to be true, it's not like you're like, oh, I sent that person an email yesterday. Yeah, they'll definitely get back to me in 3 days. Like, I'm just waiting for it. They didn't probably stash away some folder where they're going to wait to reply to me and every other 400 vendors that reach out to me. But I found this fascinating because it goes down way more than I would have thought from about the same day open a reply to a, that same email, not a follow-up email, but that same email 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours later. Well, what I thought was especially interesting, though, is that we found that salespeople were not following up enough, that perhaps some of these people were confident in that their first email was so great that how could that not get a reply? If it didn't get a reply, there's no way I should bother following up again because clearly they're not interested. Well, I think about like, how many times have I received emails and things that I was interested in but just didn't have the time or put it as a priority to reply in that moment. So we found that 50% of the sales emails team stopped after the first email that they sent. This was just one outreach to people. And so, in fact, actually, what we see is a sequence of events where you start to do email, phone, or just you know, larger email, and you get to about the seventh or eighth touch, and that starts to go back up. People are starting to respect your persistence. They start to know that you personalize that a bit, those emails a bit, they care, you care a little bit. That starts to bubble back up at the seventh or eighth touch. And by the way, all of this is, in the previous presentation talked about Jeffrey Moore, who has a really great article on how to structure a quality email. And I think while there are lots of interpretations for how to write a good email, this one was especially good. I'm happy to talk about a little bit about why I think it's a valuable structure of a quality email.
Have you found a pattern in terms of frequency of contact?
We're starting to get more into that, and hopefully we'll over the course of the next year, but no, not anything with any significance other than that, that seventh or eighth touch starts to yield. And then finally, which is something I personally, you know, my 2 years at Yesware, I just don't see it, salespeople do enough, and I'm probably guilty enough myself, that like, just there's so many opportunities to test your own messaging, what could work. And A/B testing, even with a set of buyers that you're reaching out to at a big company, to see which message resonates the best. I think there are lots of opportunities for all of us to do that. Put some rigor. I try to encourage my team, this is a company, other people that I talk to put a lot of rigor about clearly defining the criteria of the people that you're reaching out to. Clearly defining the what kind of company profile or target buyer you're going after, and investing all that time up front, really defining a couple different messages that you want to test out. And by the way, again, at NetSuite, I was using just like Word documents, and I was only looking at which emails would convert into a meeting or an opportunity. I didn't have enough time nor the Excel prowess to look at all of the emails I sent. I just focused on which of my emails most likely converted to a first meeting. And that you can do pretty easily. If I can do it, I promise you, you can. And then to just identify which ones are working well, again, even if it's just like this one most commonly led to a first meeting or a reply, understand why they worked, so maybe dissect that with your team. Like, what was it about this that was compelling to the buyer? And share this across the team. Not everyone is a great writer. In fact, New Relic does an incredible job of this. It's just they're a really technical sale. They do a great job of just sharing messages that not everybody would be able to write with the team. And then I focus a lot on email. Calling people actually does work. And I think to try and embed that in your process, even if it's nothing to do with, if you don't have tracking, you can't see when someone's opened it up, just try and couple them together. Use an email and a phone call, or email, phone call in the morning, email after. Just use some sort of sequence that incorporates phone calls into it. You may be heavier email, but I think incorporating phone into it is important. And this is a summary of the seven that I went after, I talked about. So again, I'm happy to share this with everyone in the room. But include multiple recipients, be specific about the person you're reaching out to, subject line doesn't matter, try and be personal and think, be aware of the keywords you're using. Try and be, again, more aware of the times you're sending out emails, trying to get a reply. If they don't reply, they probably won't within that 24 hours, but don't give up. Keep following up until that 7th or 8th or even 10th try. And test, experiment, do all the things that are going to be relevant to your business. This is just data. This is hopefully to lay a foundation and give you ideas for things to think about for your business, but it's not, certainly not gold.
You mentioned figuring out why the email works. It seems a bit subjective. What does that look like on your team when you guys sit down and figure it out?
So that I applied to just about every email that I send. And this will change dependent on the sequence of which I'm reaching out, who the buyer is, you know, how high up they are, the time that they might have to spend on that email. So we can talk about those things too. But generally, this is the advice that that article that I taught for reference gives. It's one of the first things I read when I joined the company, and I just came across it by luck. But I really believe it. It's the start with your conclusion. It's a lot about the way I was taught to how to write. Start with your conclusion. Think about a very specific decision that you're after and lead with that. Let them know in the first line of your email what you're after. Then bullet out or put in digestible chunks concepts that support the decision that you're after. And then data. Data could be a customer, common customer. Data could be someone that they know. It could be data that you found from a really well-renowned, in our case, sailor, like a Gartner or a Forrester, for example. But just put data to support your revenue, and then restate that conclusion at the end. Ask for a very specific call to action that references that conclusion of what you're after. It could be 5 minutes with someone that they know. It could be 5 minutes with them. It could be a referral into someone. It could just be very specific. Make it as easy and simple as possible for that person on the other line to say yes or do something. The harder you make it, the much harder it will be for you to get a reply from them.
Here's an unsolicited product plug I use, Yesware. I found that if you're monitoring Yesware, if you call, when you see an email open notice, they're still thinking about you. They may even be reading the email and go, wow, I was just reading your email. And you have a much higher chance of engaging in the conversation.
It's funny you say that because the it's split for me and the people that I talk to. That is so creepy. I would never open up a message. But a lot of people have just really seen it work. I could go either way, but I think it's if someone is reading it, it clearly is top of mind, and calling them, even if they're a bit creeped out, they're probably more likely to want to have a conversation with them.
If they would do it if you came clean also.
What's that?
They would do it if you came clean also. And said, hey, I've got a tool that allows me to see the UFC.
Totally. And I mean,
there's no reason to fake this.
Absolutely. Totally. And I mean, it's hard to do that when you work for a company that tracks emails.
Can you go back to that story where you said you emailed somebody who no longer works at
it? Oh, man. That person was actually dead. That's what happened. They were not alive. So it came back with a vengeance on me. That's what you get for not doing your
research. Everybody gets that once in a while.
So that's what happened. I hope you're glad you're asking.
You open that to Udemy.
So number one, this was a question I was going to ask before. Did the open rate include opens from people you CC? Or are you only measuring, or can you not actually delineate people
to? You can. I actually don't know the answer to that. We do have unique opens that we can test, but I don't know if they measured unique opens or just opens generally.
So I'm wondering if it would have given the same result.
But this was all
separate emails.
Okay, right. But what was consistent was the reply and open rate, so I'd like to think that there was some level of consistency about the person that was actually called out to reply. I want to be another other question.
Just do one more.
One more.
So you said to lead the conclusion. You know, if your conclusion ultimately you want out of someone's 15 minutes of their time on the phone for the breath of them out, are you saying to literally ask for 15 minutes of your time to chat in the first sentence of an email and then go in to get their attention on how you can add value to their business?
More often than not, I do not. Sometimes I personally do. As long as you can include in that first line why they should care, and to you that's like very compelling to them, and you can feel confident, you put yourself in their shoes and said, this is something that actually would be compelling to the buyer, and I think it's okay to ask. But generally, more often than not, my personal preference is to include that ask at the end, just as long as they know in the very first line what I'm after.
Cool.
Cool. Thank you, everyone.